If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Welcome back to Gabbing with Gib. I'm your host, Gibson Johns, and today we have another listener mailbag episode for you guys today. You all submitted some great questions. We're going to get into Real Housewives of Atlanta, Summer House, Love Hotel, some other various topics. A lot of good questions today. I'm recording this one from my Airbnb in Paris. I just got here earlier today. I'm here for most of this week. I'm going to go to the French Open tomorrow or the day that this episode comes out. It's my first time going to Roland Garros. I love tennis. I'm a big tennis person. Come from a big tennis family. And this is my third Grand Slam. So I've been to the US Open and Wimbledon and now the French Open. So last on my list will be the Australian Open. So I'm really excited to go to the French Open tomorrow. Then I'll just be here. It's one of my favorite cities in the world. So I'll just bop around, walk around a lot. Have a couple of friends here that I'm overlapping with just, you know, by coincidence. And I did get some questions about my trip, actually, when I asked for questions for this episode. I'm going to save some of those until I'm done. I'm back in New York for next week. So I'll spend like 5 minutes during one of next week's episodes talking about it. And if you're not interested, you can skip forward. But I'll save that for next week when my trip is officially over. But it's been really, really great. And I appreciate everybody who asked some questions about it. All right, so let's just get into all the questions about Bravo stuff that you guys had. So Martha G on Instagram said, what do you think of Britt Edie's event? Housewives are supposed to be aspirational and she def cut costs. Dustin Cohn on Threads asked a similar question. He said, after the Britt Edie flop event on The Real Housewives of Atlanta, do you think we are going to eventually hit a breaking point on Housewives with, quote, presenting wealth for the cameras? So no, I don't think we're going to hit a breaking point because I think that people pretending to have money for Real Housewives is kind of like a trope of Real Housewives and has been since the beginning. That's something that people do, I think, particularly early in their time on Housewives, like in their first couple seasons. That's something that people do. Like, that's not a new concept to me. It's very evident with Britt, I would say, and it has been since episode one, basically. I mean, I think of that scene where she goes car shopping with her husband. Like, there have been different things where it's very clear that, like, she does not have the wealth that she wants people to think she has. And that's okay, because that's, again, that is some that tension is, like, not uncommon to see on Housewives. I mean, do we not remember Chateau Charest that took forever to finish? For me, honestly, I don't want to see that kind of event that Britt had all the time, but, like, seeing something like that, like a train wreck like that every once in a while is honestly kind of funny to me. Like, I was laughing during her event. And I feel like also the issue with it was more like a matter of how she chose to spend the money that she wanted to spend on the event and, like, not allocating that properly to the right things. And also her not wanting to do the work herself to make sure that her event was good. She outsourced it all to this woman that was clearly overwhelmed and she didn't know what Britt wanted. And Britt walked in full glam in the outfit, didn't seem to have been involved with one aspect of the event, just wanted to walk in and have it be exactly what she wanted. I don't think she knew what she wanted either. I think that was part of the issue too. Like, this is a shapewear company, but we're at a golf course at a country club, but we're dressed up to go to the Kentucky Derby, but we're also playing golf, but we're also having a past hors d'oeuvres luncheon. Like, it was just, it was confusing, right? Like, I don't think that the concept and the execution just weren't there. But I think that, like, if Britt had, like, not, I bet you that the country club renting out that big, nice room that they were in, I bet that was kind of expensive. Like, I bet if she had spent less money on the location and the venue and maybe just, like, gone to a random restaurant or something and, like, outfitted it and dressed it up really nicely, she could have had a much better event. I think that was more a her thing than, like, a, oh my God, so many now housewives are going to think they have to present as rich. Because again, that has been something that has been done since the beginning of Housewives. That has always been the case. So yeah, those are my thoughts on that. I found it to be actually really funny television. And I don't think it's like some big crisis of, like, you know, women coming on who don't have money, who think they need to have money. Because that's, again, that's part of the DNA of Housewives in some respects. Karen Berglund Hero on Threads asks, how do you feel about Real Housewives of Atlanta? Do you think it's a good season? I personally am very much enjoying the season of Atlanta. I think I enjoy it more when I don't pay attention to the conversation online about it. I think a few of the storylines are definitely starting to become a little bit repetitive and cyclical for sure, particularly the Dennis, Drew, and Portia one. But I personally, like, I like the mix of women. I'm laughing a lot. I'm excited about having Phaedra and Portia together. To me, it's sparking conversation. And as Cynthia said in some interview that she did, she was like, for years there, Atlanta wasn't even sparking conversation. Like, there was no palpable conversation about it at all, basically, because it just wasn't good. And so I think the fact that people are debating, is this season good or is it not? Like, the Kenya Britt situation, the Phaedra of it all, the Portia of it all, like, people are debating this. And that means that it's more relevant, you know? And I think that's a good thing for the show. So personally, like, yeah, it's not a perfect season, but I also do think that season 16 did enough to be kind of put the franchise back on an exciting track in the future. And I'm very excited about the future of Atlanta. I've been enjoying this season. Yeah, I just think it's the best one in like 4 years, honestly. And again, the bar was kind of low, but I think that they did what needed to be done for the most part. Funky AF on Instagram asks, what do you think the whole Imrul on again, off again situation is about in Summer House? He went from full time to seemingly friend of. So, okay. Again, a theme of today's episode is going to be the idea that, like, balls get rolling online on social media around certain Bravo shows. And I think it creates these conspiracy theories. It creates these, like, these controversies that, like, what's the explanation here? Is it some big scandalous thing? I think oftentimes the real explanation for something is just not that interesting or scandalous. And I think, and I'll get into it, I think the optics of the Imrul thing are not good and it could have been handled much better. But I think ultimately, I think it's just as simple as him not meshing well with the group, not popping on camera, and not really giving much else to filming other than, like, his hookups. And I venture to guess maybe, like, once he maybe caught wind of the fact that, like, all everybody was talking about him was his all these hookups and things like that. And I think after Toegate, he kind of retreated because he realized that was sort of like a controversial issue, like once Sierra confronted him. And I bet you he just, like, retreated even more. And then in this back half of the season, he's been edited down so much because, like, he really wasn't giving anything else or anything, because it doesn't seem like he was bringing women back to the house either. So to me, it's like he seems like a good dude with much more to him than we've seen on the show. That's you know, not debatable. But that doesn't mean to me that he was completely, like, fucked over by everybody on the cast or everybody on production and that we should get our pitchforks out for him. That's personally not the hill that I'm going to die on. If you want to die on that hill, great. But that is not my fight to fight. We have seen this film before where a guy comes on Summer House, he doesn't quite work, and he's a one season wonder, and that's okay. That's okay. Like, again, it would have been nice to see more of Imrul, absolutely, but I'm not convinced that that would have made him, you know, a person that we need to see for 5 seasons. I just don't think that that's the case. Again, I'm glad he got that segment on the reunion. I think it explained a lot, but I just think it's clear that he didn't quite work on this show. And I don't think that, like, him, I mean, listen, like, I do think it was handled poorly, right? I think that editing him out of episodes when he was literally at the house or at certain meals and just not being shown, I think it's pretty bizarre. I think it's unnecessary. Like, just have him in the background, right? Like, but to me, it also just hammers home that like he just did not connect. And if he had been providing interesting content, they would have shown some of it, right? And that just wasn't the case. So yeah, I think that it was probably, the explanation is probably like just like a streamlining thing. Like they just went all in on Jesse and Lexi basically, and some other storylines towards the back half of the season. But again, I do think that's the kind of thing that like fans will notice. They will talk about it online, and then that will of course make it into a bigger thing that gets more attention. And I think that like it would have been wise just to like not cut him out, literally, like just show him in the background, show that he walked, show that he's at the group dinner. Maybe he didn't contribute much to the conversation, but like cutting him completely out when there are photos of him at a dinner, fans are going to piece that together, and then it's going to become something that it doesn't need to become. So I do feel bad for him. I think it's sad and I think it's unfortunate. Or the other way to like have gone about this is just like, just to make him officially a friend of. Like, don't make him a full-time castmate. That changes people's expectations and changes the optics of like how you can handle somebody on Summer House in terms of like how much airtime they're getting. And the last thing I'll say about this is like, this doesn't have to do with the editing down of it, but like, it's always a thing. It's always been a thing on Summer House where like people will show up certain weekends and not others. You know what I mean? Like Gabby wasn't there every weekend. I think Danielle had done that a lot in the past. Like that's a thing that happens a lot. I mean, Lindsay even did that this summer. So that idea is not unusual. I just think the way that this one has played out with Imrul is definitely like a unique circumstance that I don't fully understand. But yeah, Jamie Beth on Threads. What do you think happened to the Summer House after show? Allie Patty on Instagram also asked, why were there only 3 episodes of the Summer House after show? Fill it up 04 on Instagram. What's your actual theory on why the Summer House after show vanished after 3 episodes?
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands you need, from athletic stuff like a full court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff like a half mile stroll. Get those steps in. And for morning hikes up the mountain trail, good pace to nighttime ghost stories from the camping chair. What a twist. Whatever level of active, Sierra loves it all. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
So to correct everybody, it was actually 2.5 episodes because those after shows were around 20 minutes and the last one was like 9 minutes. So it was really more like 2.5 episodes, not to be too specific, but like ultimately, I truly don't really know. And I've asked around, I promised. I've texted some people. I've been like, what happened here? Really? So again, looping back to maybe the thread of this episode, which I've said before a bunch in the past, is like sometimes the explanations are the most boring ones. And they almost always have to do with one thing. Say it with me, money. So I think the one seemingly boring explanation could be that it was a budget thing. Maybe it was to make room for the Secrets Revealed episode that we're getting next week. As somebody explained to me, like that is a production company thing. Like they have to pay for those episodes and that's work to edit that together, find the footage, all that kind of stuff. So that's one potentially not interesting explanation, right? And the Secrets Revealed episode, I think was like a fairly, that's not something that like was always planned from the beginning of the season from what I know of. So that could explain why it gets cut off and like maybe they didn't want to spend money on editing that. But again, I don't understand that because Summer House is incredibly, Summer House has ascended into another level of Bravo show at this point. It's water cooler Bravo television, people eating up the after show. So to sort of just nix it out of the blue like that I just don't buy that as a total explanation for it. The other more like conspiracy minded explanation is like, I do kind of think it might somehow be connected to them cutting out Paige talking about Craig messaging other girls from the finale, which we had seen in the trailer and was not ultimately in the episode. And the reason why I think that is that the as I said, the third after show episode that we got, which was only really a half an episode, the episode of Summer House that was 4 discussed Paige and Craig a good amount. Like there was stuff in there that they should have talked about on the after show. They should have dissected it on the after show, and it would have had to do with Paige and Craig. And that's the portion that we didn't get. I think that was all cut. And if they're cutting stuff from what Paige talked about with Craig, about Craig in the finale, and that part was cut out of the after show, it leads me to believe that like that's somehow connected. And I don't know if that's like for narrative reasons or something else. I don't know, but it's just a little fishy. It's a little fishy. And I don't know, like maybe they didn't, I just feel like we've never really experienced something like that, you know, or we've never really picked up on something like that where things are cut out so overtly. And also, I guess tying it back to the Secrets Revealed episode, it's plausible that when we get that Secrets Revealed episode, that we will see more footage of the meetup at Lindsay's apartment in that episode. And maybe that's where we get the stuff about Paige talking about Craig messaging other girls. But I highly doubt that. Like, why would they keep that for the Secrets Revealed and not the main episode? That doesn't really make sense to me either. Anyway, long story short, I wish I knew. I don't. I've been asking around. Nobody seems to have a logical explanation. But I am just as curious as you all are. All right, Fill It Up 04 on Instagram asked three semi-related Summer House questions. One is, should a Bailey erasure be more to blame for Lexi's dynamic with the rest of the cast? Yes, I've been saying this all season. I think that Lexi not having the built-in friendship with Bailey, who, again, dropped out mid-season, I think that she lost that level of support. I think Bailey could have been like a fun connector or what have you. Like, who knows what she could have been, honestly. But like, ultimately, her and Lexi were sort of a West and Jesse type duo who came in together. They weren't friends. But like, when you come in with somebody else, you're going to bond and you're going to be there for one another and what have you. And not having that built in just created more of a valley between her and the rest of the cast, for sure. And I think that people want to blame Jesse for everything that impacted Lexi negatively when it came to this season and sort of her rift with the cast. And I think that's just pretty ill-informed. Yeah, he's to blame for some of it, but not all of it. Is Lexi giving Jules season 4 vibes the way the cast and the girls treated her? They were very dismissive of her on rewatch. So I have not rewatched season 4 of Summer House in years, but I think that's a pretty solid parallel, to be honest, in terms of kind of how she popped. I think Lexi made a little bit more inroads in terms of, like, you know, she got much more screen time than Jules ever got. She's much more at the talk of the town, I think, than Jules ever was. But I also think, again, like, placing all of the blame on the rest of the cast and the rest of the house for someone not connecting or fitting in a bigger way is just trying to find a scapegoat, in my opinion. When sometimes really the explanation is that people just aren't made for reality TV, or they're not bound to pop in that environment. It can be a combo of them being isolated and not accepted, but also just not really working. I think Jules didn't work in a bigger way than Lexi did, from my memory of that season. And like, I think Lexi should totally come back for another season. I think it'd be interesting. I mean, her and Jesse have so much bad blood right now, and they've said so much about one another in the press. Like, put them in a house together and let's see what happens. Like, so I think Lexi should totally come back. She shouldn't be a one season wonder like Jules was. But I do think that's an interesting parallel that's pretty apt in some ways. All right, last question from Phil. If you are Paige and her team, do you think they overall are satisfied with the fan reaction to her on a scale from 1 to 10? I mean, if I'm Paige and her team, I bet they're thrilled. 9 or 10 out of 10, to be honest. Like, this has been a huge year for her. She's gotten some incredible, like, highbrow press out of this. But she has also, like, crucially, she has not beaten a dead horse about this breakup like some other people on Bravo have done on the back of a breakup in recent years. I mean, let's just like take the Lexi and Jesse situation as a comparison point for Paige and Craig. So after the breakup, Paige has done a few interviews, again, with highbrow publications like Glamour and the New York Times. She's spoken about it a couple times on her podcast, but she hasn't really been, you know, using it every single week as a subject. She's made some social media comments, obviously. She waited until deep in the season to do Watch What Happens Live. Like, I was thinking that maybe she wasn't even going to do it at all, but she waited until very deep into the season to go on there and answer a lot of questions about Craig and the breakup. And I thought that in that appearance, she was unapologetic and she was shady, but she didn't go over the top with it, right? I actually loved that appearance. I thought it was really, really well done, and she handled the moment very well. And granted, of course, like, she wasn't the victim, quote unquote, of the breakup. I guess that was technically Craig, but also Craig has barely done any press about the breakup. Like, yeah, he's done some, you know, there was that one Instagram story, and he's had a couple moments on Watch What Happens Live, of course, where he's like soaked the flames. But ultimately, like, he hasn't done some big tell-all interview. He hasn't really done any of that. So, you know, I think that he'll probably wait until this coming season of Southern Charm to maybe get into more like about more of his perspective about moving on and post breakup and all that. But like, neither Paige nor Craig really needed to like milk this. I think Paige has gotten some amazing press opportunities and sponsorship opportunities that are like, you know, on the back of it, but they weren't like overtly about the breakup, which I think is important. And like, meanwhile, Lexi and Jesse, whose relationship slash situationship was like 8 weeks on and off versus Paige and Craig's 3-year relationship. They've both been doing interviews like every single week, milking it and like absolutely bone dry to the point where nobody really gives a fuck anymore. These two couples handled things completely differently after they broke up. And I think that like it just shows that Paige and Craig didn't need to milk it in the same way because they have other things to talk about, other things going on, and their profiles are already so much bigger. And so, you know, if circling back to the question, if I'm Paige's team, I'm very happy with how this went. And like, anecdotally, and I know that not everybody loves Paige, especially people who are more in Craig's corner on the back of this breakup, who consider themselves like bigger Southern Charm fans. They maybe aren't the biggest fans of her, but I think generally speaking, anecdotally, she's one of the biggest stars on Bravo, housewives or not. And she has gone well beyond the scope of the Bravoverse, and that is just a testament to her star power and her likability and sort of just everything about her. And so I think that she's in a really good place, and Paige is on the path to not needing the show right now, to not needing the Bravo platform right now. And that is sort of like the dream scenario if you're a reality star and the team of a reality star, where you can really branch out. You're not beholden to the network for, again, publicity, for the platform, for what have you. I do think that like, I would be wary of her completely abandoning the Bravo Summer House platform, like in the long term, I would say. But right now, Paige is at a point where she has an amazing career. Many people know her outside of Summer House. She has plenty of other ways to interact with her fans and engage her fans and the rest of the public without Summer House. I do think it's pretty crucial that she's still on TV. But yeah, if I'm her team, I'm very happy. Karen Berglund, hero on Threads, also asked, what's your prediction for Summer House? Do you think Lindsay will have a spinoff? I want her on our TV still. Marcy Marcello on Threads also asked, do you think it's time for the Summer House cast to be reworked? And if so, how? So I do think we will get a show. I do. I think that they have heard our rallying cry. I've heard some things from behind the scenes, and I do think that like things are probably in the works. Like where there's smoke, there's fire in terms of like, you know, things that people have messaged me and things that I've heard from different people. When that's going to happen, I don't know. But I definitely know of people who have been reached out to for a show that seemingly fits the bill of like a post-Summer House world, where it's like people in their 30s and 40s who are, you know, married, having kids, settling down, buying apartments in the city, whatever. There are people being reached out to for that. People that the public does not know. My hope for how this works, and this is not based in any intel, but I feel like the timing is like pretty fucking spot on for this. Like, let's have a backdoor pilot at the end of Summer House season 10. So this current summer, they're filming Summer House season 10, right? I think Lindsay, she should film a lot in the city. She should come out to the house one or two times, but mostly film in the city. Maybe she's a friend of. Maybe Carl's a friend too. Kyle and Amanda fully in the house. Paige and Sierra fully in the house. Everybody else fully in the house. Let's make it one last big 10th summer, right, with this crew. And also bring in some new blood, right? Like we have to start to introduce some new faces for West and Jesse to start to sort of build around. And then you have this backdoor pilot at the end of season 10, where maybe they come back to the city after their last weekend in the Hamptons and they all meet up for dinner. Or they all go to a birthday party or what have you. Lindsay's birthday's in August. Kyle's birthday's in August. Maybe they have a joint birthday party. They're both Leos and they invite all the people from the Summer House, but then they also invite, you know, their other crew that we don't get to see on Summer House. And then drama happens in that birthday party. And then we follow the other friends the next morning, the next day, where they hash it out, they talk it out. And that's the first episode of In the City or whatever it's going to be called, right? That is my sort of dream scenario. And I think that is really, it could happen, right? Like the timing would be good if they're reaching out to people now. And then on actual Summer House, season 11, you keep West and Jesse, you keep Lexi, you maybe keep Sierra in there too, because I think she could still kind of fit the bill. Paige, I think, can go either way. And then you have whatever new faces are being introduced this summer. And then there you have your Summer House cast. But then you also have this other show that's building itself and it's becoming a landing ground for people who graduate out of the Summer House. So if Sierra's around on season 11, she could jump to the new show ahead of season 12, or Paige the same thing. That's sort of how I'm thinking about it. And I hope that's how they're approaching it. Again, that is totally based on like my own desires and like what I think would work really well. So yeah, I do think we'll get that show. I do not know when, and I don't know who exactly would be involved when either. All right, Mrs. Sarah Machette on Instagram. How do you feel about the online reaction to The Valley? Does it feel as dark as the show? I do think so. This is why I don't tweet or post nearly as much about The Valley that I do some other shows, because it's not my favorite show to talk about online, because you really can't have discourse about it. It's kind of wild. Like, people are really behind one side of the cast, and they're really not just anti the other side of the cast, like they hate them. And I understand why, right? I totally get it. And I don't really fall on either side of it. I think sometimes when the online fandom is so staunchly one side, I tend to question that sometimes, just like, I don't know, whatever. You're right. There are some really dark, heated opinions that exist online for the show. And it's like, there's no room for gray area to talk about it. And so that's why I'd rather just talk about it in the relative safety of this podcast for people who like want to hear my opinion and who understand the gray area maybe, and who want to hear discussion based analysis of these shows. So yeah, the Valley, I agree. The online discussion of it is dark, and it's not worth it. Like, it's just not worth wading into. It's just wild how quickly it became that. Sin Samuelson on Threads. Why does Bravo insist on forcing Lala on us? Personally, I'm fine with it. I liked her brief appearance on The Valley. I liked her confronting Jesse. And I generally think that her input on the after show for The Valley is also pretty helpful and informative. So I personally don't have an issue with it. Again, I understand why people still are holding things against Lala from the last season of Vanderpump Rules. I get it. I'm just not one of those people. And again, it gets into that idea of like, yeah, you might not like her, but she's polarizing. She gets people talking. She's this lightning rod figure that people are invested in, whether that's for good or bad reasons. But we still have built up investment in Lala, and that's a worthwhile thing for the network. Sarah Prouty, what is going on with Jersey? Girl, if I knew, I would tell you. I have no idea. I haven't heard any updates, because I don't think there are any. Personally, that's what I think. I think Rhode Island seems to be the focus. There are rumors that Dolores is going to be involved in Rhode Island somehow. Like, there's been some Dumois chatter about her somehow being involved. So maybe there will be some sort of crossover situation to sort of lead into the show. I don't know if that's accurate or not. That's just what the streets are saying. But yeah, no update on Jersey. Kim Roberts asked on Threads, who do you cast for a second season of Love Hotel? I think Dorinda would be awesome. Similarly, Marcy Marcello said, who would you cast for the next season of Love Hotel? So I do think Mary Payne from The Pink Shade, who was on the podcast a couple weeks ago, she said that she thinks there should be like a couple more women. And I don't hate that idea. I think having anywhere from 4 to 6 would be kind of a nice, solid number, basically like a small Housewives cast, right? It would be kind of nice and have a few more men in there. I do think if you could get a handle on Sonia, if you could really rein her in some way to have her not dominate proceedings and to follow some of the formula of the show, I think she could be really amazing, right? But if not, there's plenty of other single women who would work. I think Dorinda would be fantastic. I agree with Kim. I think Garcelle could be amazing on this show. I think we would see a really fun light side of her. I think Heather Gay would be really great in this environment. Two Miami women who I think could be really good on Love Hotel are Adriana, who would be so fun. Like, if you can't rein Sonia in, right? If Sonia could be too much like a liability or too wild on Love Hotel, Adriana could be a version of that energy. Right? Like, she scratches some of that same itch. So I would love to see Adriana down there. I think Kiki could be amazing, because this could also be, I think, one of the things about Miami, which is a near perfect show, as we all know. But I think one of the things about Miami is that there, you know, we want to know more about Kiki. We want to know more of her story. She's a friend of, like, she's delivered such good, fun moments. But what about her backstory? What's really going on in her love life? Love Hotel could be a great place to learn about that and to really kind of dig into that side of Kiki's life. The other person I thought about also was Portia. If you want to sort of follow the post-Simon of it all, but maybe you would wait a season or two to do that or for her to be ready. But she could also be really fun in that environment. What are your thoughts about scenes we see in previews of shows and then do not make it into the season of the show? another thing that I understand in theory, right? Like the trailers and the teasers, they're almost always cut before every episode of a season is finalized. Like so the episodes are still being edited by the time the trailer first comes out. But in practice, I don't get why it happens so often with notable material. Like, it's one thing for Garcelle and Erica's kiss on the final cast trip of this past season of The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills that was in the trailer to not make it into the final episode, right? Like, that's a fun cutaway moment, probably. Like, they probably opted to spend more time on the episode talking about whatever drama was going on. So fine, you cut the fun moment. But like, for Paige's comments about Craig, again, we're circling back to this, for those not to make it into the episode, it's just a glaring omission. Like, people are going to notice that at this point. Like, even if it's not every viewer that's going to notice that, the extremely eagle-eyed viewers online will, and they'll talk about it and they'll post about it, and then it will pick up steam. And then those viewers who did not at first notice it when they first watched the episode, then they'll hear about it and then they'll get pissed off too. And so like, the eagle-eyed fans sound the alarm and everybody else, the more casual viewers, start to hear about it, and then it becomes more of a thing. And again, is that worth it for whatever reason why they cut it? Like, I don't know why, but it's just going to brew conspiracy theories. It's going to, like, again, when the explanation is probably something not very scandalous, probably has to do with narrative, it probably has to do with airtime, it probably has to do with something like very technical, but it feels scandalous because it is scandalous material that we didn't end up getting any context around. And again, we still know that she made the accusation that he was messaging girls, right? But we don't know anything about it. So now it's just like this lingering thing in the ether that people don't really, there's nowhere for it to land. So yeah, I do think they should crack down on this. I don't know if this is like comes from the Bravo side or the production company side. I don't know. But I think that they should try to make this not happen, because then they would just avoid more controversy. Like, and this is the kind of controversy that makes them look, whoever makes these decisions, it's like sketchy, right? Fans like are questioning it. All right, Paul Kabak on Instagram: with such a large gay following, why do you think there's such little representation for gay people on Bravo? So this is totally something that I'd love to see. I would love to see a gay ensemble docuseries type show on Bravo. But I do think it's a kind of a dual problem based out of the idea that I still think that gay shows feel like they need to represent the entire LGBTQ community, right? Like, there's this, I think that's been the case. And I think people, even though I don't feel like that burden should be felt on people who want to create shows like this, I think it is felt, because I think there's pressure from the community themselves to provide that representation for everybody, because there still aren't that many gay shows and there are no gay reality shows. And so I bet you when casting or production feel that pressure, then that goes into who they ultimately cast. And that could result in inauthentic friend groups, which means that the show is not destined to be good. Like, we all know the best reality shows are genuine, authentic friend groups. And when you feel like this group of people that you're focusing on has to represent literally every single type of person within the LGBTQ community, it's not going to work. And then the audiences in turn reject them. But I also think that we as a community are our own worst enemies when it comes to accepting representation and taking in something that is meant for us and about us. Like, we are our own worst critics for one another, for gay projects and shows and movies. Like, look at the reaction to Benny Drama's show Overcompensating, not a reality show, but it's very much about his experience in life being closeted in college. You can go look up the show. It's a great, I very much enjoyed the show. It hit home very much for me, and I just connected to it really deeply. But then the conversation online was like, okay, but they're in their 30s and it's not realistic for them to be in college, or what year is this? Is this 2014 or 2020? Like, people were focusing on these things that they found quote unquote distracting, which if you genuinely felt that you could not get into Overcompensating because the year was unclear to you and you all of a sudden are taking issue with a 30-year-old playing a teenager, when that is something that happens in pretty much every teen show that we've ever loved as a society, like, that's nothing new. But if you're going to suddenly find issue with that because it's now this queer show, okay, you're allowed to do that, but I see you. And secondly, like, the people who are the biggest critics, who are focusing on these things, who are criticizing the show publicly, were queer people. And again, everybody has every right to be a critic of a show. Like, that is not what I'm saying. But it's just like, people, it's almost like shows are destined to fail before they're even set out into the world because we don't accept things as a community. And then the other thing that I think about is like, I think that, you know, the kind of dramatic sort of party-based groups that tend to get featured on Bravo shows, the gay equivalent of that, it'd be hard to get people to talk about what's really going on sometimes. I think, you know, I mean, with like open relationships and substances and partying, like, again, that's very much a generalization, but I think it's an accurate one in terms of like what kinds of groups people would want to see and what they would want to hear about. It'd be hard to find people to be really honest and open about those topics. And also it's gray area, I think, in terms of showing it on TV. Sydney Day Hardines on Instagram, not Bravo related, but if you've been keeping up with the Welsh Five drama. Okay, I love the Welsh Five. If you guys don't know who they are, they're this group of five Welsh friends who went viral. I think it was around Christmas time when they came to New York, and they like tried all the US fast food chains, and they went to all the chain restaurants, and like they just like they were addicting. Like I just like watched every single video they posted. They were amazing. They had the best narration, loved them. They went on a couple other trips into Florida. I thought they were going on a trip to Vegas, but I never saw any of the content from that. Anyway, loved them. But I did not hear about this drama. I just did a quick Google. And now I'm upset because apparently Charlie, the person who I think is the star of the group, she's no longer friends with some of them or any of them. That's upsetting to me. And I think that is a mistake on their part. Like, you're stronger together, you guys. Like, we gotta bury this hatchet. And then last question, really fun one from Sam Bush, friend of the pod, aka Bravo historian on Threads. If you could cast an entire show with one and dones from across the franchises, who would you choose? Okay, this is an amazing question. So I'm picturing this as a season of Ultimate Girls Trip. And this is who I would pick, okay? So I just went through a list of all the one season wonders just to make sure I didn't forget anybody. I think I would do Cindy Barshop, the Jazzling Queen from Roni back in the day. I would do Jules from Roni. I think that she's obviously lived quite the life since the show. I actually didn't hate her on the show. I would be curious to see what she's like these days. Obviously, Carlton. I think that she might be a little thirsty, but she's kind of iconic. And I think, you know, let's see her cast some spells on some of these people. Listen, I did not like her, but would I be interested to see her interact with a different group of people? Diana Jenkins? Yes, maybe I would. So let's put Diana Jenkins in there. Let's do Claudia Jordan from Atlanta. I think that is somebody, out of this whole list of people, Claudia Jordan is the one that I'm like, damn, in another timeline, in another universe, like she maybe could have been like a really good housewife. Like she has a star quality to me that I'm like, God, can we not try her again? You know, I would do Anna Kinkosis from Miami. She was on season 2. I think she was she was a pretty adept reality star from what I can recall from that season. So, you know, why not throw her in there just to get some different franchise representation? Tiffany Moon, a one season wonder from Dallas. And then I would do Katie Rost, who technically was only a housewife on season 1 of Potomac. She was featured on another season or two, but was only a one season housewife. So that's who I would pick. I feel like that's obviously so chaotic, but like the list of one season wonder housewives is pretty chaotic. And there's other ones in there that you could throw in there, but that is who I would personally choose. That's a really fun question. All right, well, that is it for this week's listener mailbag episode. I appreciate you taking in a lot of these solo episodes because it's harder for me to schedule episodes with guests while I am not in that time zone in New York. So, but I am, this is the last week of my trip. So I'll be back to regularly scheduled programming and maybe a few bonus episodes and things and some mid-year episodes that I'm hopeful about starting next week. So thanks so much for listening to Gabbing with Gib. Please make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to the show wherever you're listening to this right now. And we'll see you next week. Thanks so much for listening. Thank you for listening to the show. Subscribe to Gabbing with Gib on any podcast platform to listen to new episodes, and subscribe to Gabbing with Gib on YouTube to watch full-length versions of our interviews. We'd also love your support with a 5-star review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. You can follow me at Gib Sonoma on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok, and keep up with all things Gabbing with Gib at Gabbing with Gib on Instagram and TikTok. Gabbing with Gib is an independent podcast hosted by me, Gibson Johns. It's produced by myself and Riley Dabbs. Graphics are by Rachel Roth, and our cover art photography is by Troy Hallahan. If you want to reach out about guest bookings, sponsorship, or advertising opportunities, email us at gabbingwithgib@gmail.com. Thank you again for your support, and see you next time.
USAA knows dynamic duos can save the day, like superheroes and sidekicks, or auto and home insurance. With USAA, you can bundle your auto and home and save up to 10%. Tap the banner to learn more and get a quote at usaa.com/bundle. Restrictions apply.